Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Anadi Martel. Anadi took sannyas in 1976 and is a physicist who designs sound and light devices used by many organizations including NASA. Anadi has been president of the International Light Association for 7 years and is the creator of the Sensora system. I'm so happy to have Anadi on the show, and I hope you enjoyed. Anadi, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks, Warren. I'm great. It's great fun to be here.
Okay, great. So to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
It's a long, long time ago. I was about 16, I believe, when I first heard of him. I was already interested in meditation. I was practicing Zen meditation, and I was reading about these incredible Zen masters who lived centuries ago. And I was kind of dreaming to be able to meet one day. And then it through some very strange coincidence, a little pamphlet came into my hand. You have to remember, this was back in 76. Osho was not at all well known then. It so happened that a friend of a friend of my mother was one of the first sannyasin. She was Ma Nirgun, a Canadian woman who was Osho's cook for many years. So she sent this little pamphlet, just one or two pages, to her friend who gave it to my mother because she knew that me and my brother were interested in meditation. And I remember this moment so clearly. It really cut my life in two. There was a kind of perhaps some kind of satori actually happened at that moment, because I read the first phrase of that little pamphlet and there was a kind of instant recognition. I knew that the man was speaking, was writing this, knew what he was saying. And this felt so incredible to hear somebody who knows what he's saying. He's not just repeating borrowed knowledge. So I just intuitively felt it immediately that he had it. And I knew immediately that I had to see him. But of course, I was 16, I was a student. It wasn't so simple to go to India. It took me a couple of years to get the money together to go. And so I reached there when I was 18. About 18.
Wow, that's quite precocious. And then did you stay with Osho for a long time?
Yeah, the first time I went over the summertime, over the monsoon, because I was, as I said, I was studying physics at the university. Physics was really my passion, trying to understand the nature of time and space. Very spiritual quest, actually. So I stayed 3 months the first time. And at that time, I was wondering whether I should drop everything and stay, drop my studies and so on. So I asked Osho. You know, in those days, we could talk to him directly quite frequently. We had personal darshans. So I asked him if I should drop my studies and stay. And he said no. He said no, that it was important to continue studies and that I should pursue and come back after. He said something very beautiful. He said, most rich way of being is when you can combine knowledge and meditation, or science and meditation. And the way he put it was so funny. He said, in your lab, let matter be your God. And in your meditation room, let God be your matter. So I never forgot that. And it's not easy to try to combine these two dimensions of meditation and science and the mind. And I'm still trying, working on it, actually, after all these years.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think it summarizes Osho's message to us that he didn't want to deny either aspects, and we are holistic matter and spirit together. He probably was one of the few masters, as far as I know, that gave so much importance to science as well. He was not denying the matter and the scientific approach. And as I mentioned in the introduction, you are a physicist, and you mentioned you study physics, of course. And for a long time, you have been working on high tech light devices for healing and therapy. So you developed this interest in light and sounds and applications for healing. I'm wondering if you have ever talked to Osho about your research and interests, and what did he say about that?
Yeah, all over the 80s, I started to explore building devices using sound and light, because my interest was to see if these devices could be used in the service of meditation, using technology in the service of meditation rather than having a detrimental effect, as many technologies tend to have. And so I started to work with sound, sound spaces that were used in therapy. I was living with a woman at that time. My primo was a therapist, a well-known therapist. And so we used to work with people, and I would create sound spaces with moving sound specialization to try to enhance the atmosphere, to create deeper spaces for therapy. And then I started to work with brainwaves and brainwave monitors. And I found that you can entrain brainwaves through pulsing light, started to explore that. And gradually, I created more and more sophisticated devices. And it came to a point, I think it must have been in 86 or 87, where we had put together a system combining light and sound, which we felt was quite powerful and beautiful. And so I, as you just mentioned, I asked Osho about it. I was wondering, perhaps he'd say something like, drop these gadgets and do the real thing, meditate and forget these things. But not at all. It was the opposite. He was extremely positive and encouraging. And he said a few things which helped me for many years after that to pursue this research, because it wasn't always easy. He said some things like that this was important work and that it was worthwhile pursuing. And he said it had been done in the past. He mentioned something like to the effect that this kind of science had been developed in Atlantis, for example, and was now forgotten, and it was being rediscovered, and that it was that light and sound would become the therapy of the, that's what he said very specifically. And he said, so to continue this work, and he said he actually wanted it in the ashram. So at that time, he asked the ashram management to give me a space to pursue this research, and even to fund some of it by buying some of my equipment. So we actually set up an experimental room in Pune One. It was called the Astralarium. I did it with Swami Prem Kabir, who was the an astrologer at that time, was giving astrology workshops. And we created this room with my instruments as they were at that time, with the, flooding the whole room with different colors and pulsations and rhythms. And so that was a great time. I could experiment with many, many friends and subjects. And this is actually where I developed many techniques that I still use. We would test all kinds of frequencies, brainwave frequencies, to see the effects on people and so on. And because you would think that there would be a knowledge base for these things, which we could simply access and start to work on. But I quickly found that it wasn't the case. There was no established knowledge about using brainwave entrainment and so on. There were different theories, and even using colors. There's many, many different systems, and they sometimes are contradictory. It's very hard to find just one single way to understand colors and light, because it's a multidimensional phenomenon. So there are many, many ways to look at it, to work with it. So gradually over the years, we created our own method.
I will definitely want to hear more and go deeper into the development of the device and how they apply to consciousness and meditation. But for now, I was really caught by what Osho said in terms of the fact that this experiment had been attempted before in Atlantis. I don't know if you've done any research on that, or if you can expand a little bit more, because it's fascinating to hear.
Yes, you don't hear so much so often about Osho's more esoteric comments or visions, especially in the later part of his life. In the early part, he talked a lot more about chakras and esoteric things. Yes, of course, I read about Atlantis and so on, as many people do, but I don't have any special knowledge or discoveries to relay in that field. But I do feel sometimes when I met a number of researchers around the world, and we do feel sometimes like we are some kind of small family. We kind of recognize each other, and perhaps it comes from some kind of past in that nature. I don't know. It could be.
That's fascinating. I trust Osho so much, and I feel like that when he talks, he doesn't just talk like that. So if he said that the experiment was been attempted before in Atlantis, I kind of feel like, okay, he was not just using a metaphor in this case. But obviously, it's very mysterious to know how actually Osho knew that in the first place. Yes. And how he can make such statements. But anyway, so another thing that I'm really curious about, I don't know if it's related to the work you do, but let's, and I don't want to go too much in for the tangent, but I've heard Osho talking about the Kirlian photography in a positive way, and it could capture the awe of people and objects. So I don't know if this is related to the work and research you do in any way.
Yes, indirectly, yes. I did work with Kirlian photography. It's a beautiful technique. I wouldn't say that it lets you see the aura. It rather lets you see more the bioelectrical field of the body. There may be connections with the aura, but it's not a one-to-one relation like sometimes people assume. But yes, Osho was always very much open to these new techniques. And well, for example, he's the one who invited Peter Mandel in the ashram in the late 80s. Peter Mandel was one of the pioneers in applying light, colored light, to acupuncture points and in Kirlian photography as well. And he created a technique called color puncture, which was taught in the ashram in those days. And so Osho had this tendency to really gather people who had this kind of knowledge and were doing this kind of innovative research. And there were a few of us in the ashram at that time.
Osho was really a pioneer in so many ways, because back then in the late 70s, 80s, even in the 90s, there was not much talk about this new technology applied to healing, therapy, meditation and consciousness. Whereas nowadays, things have changed quite a lot.
And, oh, yes.
You are clearly a pioneer in this field. As I mentioned, back in the 80s and 90s, the scientific community was not very receptive to this type of research. But now there is so much talk about light therapy, photobiomodulation, and even brain waves. And I'm quite familiar personally with the biohacking movement. I've been playing around with a number of devices. And I've used a light pod myself for stress relief and injury and recovery. But what I see is that the application specifically for light therapy is mainly for sports and recovery and stress relief, and not much in terms of meditation and consciousness. So I'd love to hear for you, how do you connect light with consciousness and meditation?
Well, as you say, right now is a very exciting time for this whole field. Things have changed tremendously, I would say, since the early 2000s, maybe 2004, 2000, around that time, I felt there was a shift in the global unconscious layer of the planet, where suddenly people became much more open in quite a quick way, within a 1 year or two. They became much more open to energy medicine, and applying light and other subtle energy means in a way that was not the case at all before. Like when we started to work on these things in the 80s and 90s, there was very little response from the world at large. We felt really isolated. And many times I felt like dropping the whole thing. I mean, I was investing my whole money, my whole time in that, and there didn't seem to interest anybody. Nobody could see the value of it. So there were many moments where we got discouraged. And it's in those times that we would remember what Osho had told us, and that we would just continue, keep going. And until the early 2000s, as I just mentioned, there was a shift really in the world. And suddenly people became much more receptive to the idea that using light as a form of healing is something very valuable. Now, light is a completely multidimensional phenomena. That's really a fundamental point to realize. Light touches all layers of reality because it's both something extremely subtle, and it's also something that has the most powerful impact on the material world. So it really bridges these two dimensions, the physical, the energy, physical world, and the world of mind or consciousness. Light really is a bridge between between those two dimensions. And because it covers all these fields, it also means that it can be applied in many, many different dimensions. And this leads, as you mentioned, to all kinds of techniques that are now part of the medical field. There's a whole field of light medicine, applying light in very scientific ways. And there are many wonderful discoveries in that field. And light is more and more part of medicine. So that part is quite is well covered now. There's a real expansion of the field, and thousands of scientists are working in it now. But there's this whole other dimension of using light in its more subtle layers, which is still not part of the scientific world. Of course, it's still a marginal alternative, and there are so many extraordinary techniques and modalities of using light using this dimension. And our particular work really is more in that aspect of using light, because of course light is always connected with consciousness. Light is a very symbol of consciousness for us, where even the word enlightenment means somehow light is the very embodiment of awareness, of consciousness. And so when you work with light, you in the right way, and you can really connect to these layers of consciousness. And the beautiful thing is that you can use technology to create light in such ways that you can touch these, or at least approach these dimensions. I often feel that the technologies I work with are a kind of bridge between the astral world and the physical world. It kind of brings to the physical world patterns or visions or light that you only see normally in dreams or in a non-material astral plane. So now with technology, we can really work at that level, and that's what I'm exploring.
Okay, and then you mentioned that, well, I mentioned before in the introduction that you also the creator of the Sensora technology. So you produce your own devices to work with light. So you do research, you're a scientist, you're very much interested in this connection and application of light in terms of healing and therapy and medicine and meditation and consciousness. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you specifically use your own device in terms of helping people heal and perhaps expand their consciousness.
Yes. Well, we came to this formula where we combine light, sound, and also kinesthetic sensation. We have a special chair which has an array of sound transducers creating a wave of kinesthetic vibration. And so when you work on this multi-sensorial way, we found that you can have a very deep impact on the brain and on consciousness. And so we create a space. It's a whole room that's converted into this kind of magical multi-sensorial space. We call it Sensora. There's a large screen that covers the field of vision. It's about, depending on the models, 2 or 3 meters in diameter, a beautiful circular screen. This our special chair underneath, so the person is reclining under the screen, and the sound field within the room. And we created programs combining these three aspects together. And when you do that, you create an environment which is sensorially so powerful that it helps to quite quickly disconnect you from your normal regular mind activity. It helps to really shift from the normal day-to-day thought-based state to a different level of perception. Because when you work with these with light and sound, you have the opportunity to work with very pure signals, very pure vibrations. And so you can create this very pure environment, which helps you to connect with some part of yourself where you're really beyond the normal day-to-day worries. And what we found is that this kind of environment kind of dissolves the boundaries between conscious and unconscious. And in a therapy context, it's very useful because then in that state, things move on their own. You can have memories, buried memories can emerge spontaneously. You have deep insights coming spontaneously. And so that's what we found. Now therapists over the world who are using the Sensora use it as a kind of adjunct to whatever form of therapy they work with. it kind of amplifies whatever they're working with. And this type of system now has many different applications. It's used, for example, to help people with depression, burnout, or PTSD. We also found through unexpected experiences with people that it helps with chronic pain and fibromyalgia. It helps with things like insomnia. We found out that it helps kids with autism. So there's many, many fields where light can have this very positive and powerful impact on us. So we have this large system, the Sensora, that's really meant for therapists. And a few years ago, I wanted to adapt this technology to make it more available to many people. So I created a smaller version, which is called the Sensosphere. It's a globe. It's a light globe. It's about, I have two versions. It's about 30 or 40 centimeters in diameter. And it's a beautiful object that you can put in your home, and that incorporates a similar technology to the Sensora in the sense that it works. It embeds low-frequency pulsations within the beautiful colors. And through that, it can help to entrain different biorhythms, such as brainwaves and other rhythms. And so this object, the Sensosphere, is much more affordable, and people can use it for themselves. So now yoga teachers use it, and people put it in waiting rooms and so on. So it's kind of led to an expansion of the work, because it made it more accessible than the larger Sensora system.
Yeah, that's wonderful, because, you know, of course, if you go to the mass market where everyone, it's more affordable and everyone can use it even in their own home or the meditation room or the, you know, before going to sleep, right. And it's much more useful than just a channel of using it in conjunction with therapy. I've got a couple of questions just came up. One, if there is any side effect, and the other one is if you have done any research to show that when people are having a treatment or after a session, if there is any effect on the physiological and biological markers, because I think that will help you a lot to then expand further and get scientific recognition in terms of, you know, HRV, or, you know, if it improves the sleep, because now you can measure the quality of your sleep, you can measure physiological effect of a number of daily activities through devices that you can apply to your body. So I think it'd be great if you could provide some data.
Oh, this is really a key issue, and so I am definitely, and it's one of the most difficult parts, because all this type of clinical research is, of course, essential, but it's also very expensive to produce. So we did manage to make one clinical study, which had very interesting results, which was published in peer-reviewed magazine. So yes, I'm very much aware that this has to be done, and we do what we can with our limited means. We're also working through case studies. We are people who use the Sensosphere and Sensora. We encourage them to record case studies, what happens with different people and so on. So that's also a useful way to work. And you talk about possible side effects, and that's one of the beautiful things of working with light, is that it has very little detrimental effects if it's used properly. The body and our system has a way of absorbing the colors that it needs and rejecting the others. So often, for example, in the Sensosphere, we work with the full rainbow spectrum, and then people will just naturally drink the what they're missing, what they're lacking. And it's very rarely we see any negative effects. I mean, we've seen thousands of people go through the process, and it basically never happened that we had negative reaction. The worst that happens is that some people are simply not much touched. It doesn't do anything for them. They may not be what they need, so it's just boring. Nothing happens. But in terms of negative effects, that's very, very rare.
Okay, that's great to hear. And I wish that, you know, if anyone is listening and they may be kind of, you know, investor sponsor, so they want to support you. They may want to, you know, support some scientific research, because that's really the way to get credibility, get data, then can help your business grow in terms of helping people get access to this amazing technology. Another topic that is very much talked lately is about circadian rhythms. There is a lot of interest around, you know, good quality sleep and the effect of blue lights versus red lights. And the advice is to get exposure to light early in the morning and during the day, and reduce blue light exposure in the evening after dusk, because otherwise the brain gets confused and the brain thinks it's still day, and it inhibits the production of melatonin, which then means you can't sleep very well. So and blue light is emitted by smartphones, computers, and all of that. So it's becoming more and more of a problem. And is this anywhere related to the work you do?
Yes, absolutely. I didn't expect you would bring the interview in such a scientific direction, Swara. The question of circadian rhythm and troubles with blue lighting is a key issue in society today, because of the shift to LED light that's been happening in the past few years. It's kind of happy coincidence that the first source of artificial lighting that we got to discover, the incandescent light that Edison discovered more than a century ago, is actually a very healthy light, because it has a spectrum very similar to that of the sun. And so we got used to the idea over that last century that artificial light is not a problem, it's fine. We can use it and there's no risks involved. But in fact, it's not the case, because now new sources like fluorescence and LEDs have light spectrums completely different from sunlight. And because we're so used to think that artificial light is not a problem, if it looks the same, it must be the same, people are not so much aware of the risks involved. And the governments have jumped in and are phasing out incandescent light and kind of forcing LEDs on our societies in the name of energy efficiency, which is, of course, a very noble aim. But now the scientific community and people working with light have been saying for years that it's not such a good idea. There are many factors to consider, and in a way, this whole shift to LED light is a kind of gigantic photobiological experiment that's being thrown onto millions of people without really knowing the full consequences of it. So it is definitely an important issue. And as you mentioned, well, there are simple things that you can watch for and try to take care. One is to use blue light filters at night, things like Flux on your computer, or now Apple has this function built in, so that blue light is automatically reduced at night on your computer screen. And you should choose LED lights which are of the warm white type, more yellowish color, rather than the cool white, the bluish color. Because at night you definitely don't want this blue part of the spectrum. So simple things like that can be done to try to mitigate the issue.
Okay, that's great, and it's a topic that is gaining lots of interest, because it does affect sleep, and if people don't sleep well, obviously it's detrimental to health in the long term and in short term as well.
The impact was much deeper than people realize. There's a recent discovery showing that I think something like nearly 2/3 of our whole genetic activity in our cells is linked to the circadian rhythm. It's a key to all biological processes, and any disruption in that rhythm has far-reaching consequences on health. And it of course there's short-term things like sleep problems, but on the longer term it can have an impact with things like diabetes and cancer and so on. So it's definitely a key issue.
I personally use the Flux app, as you mentioned, and also orange glasses that filter the blue light in the evening after dusk. I'd love to hear what are your latest projects, if there is any specific field of research you are working on at the moment.
There are so many things. as I was saying to you a little before, there's many things I'm working on and researching, and I feel a lifetime is not enough. There's so much I'd like to create and do. One of the things I'm working on now is an even smaller version of the Sensosphere, because even that is still a little expensive for most people. So I'm working now on a very small globe that you can hold in your hand, and that will again incorporate some of the same technology, but reduced to its essence, really. And I'm hoping to produce something that will be much less expensive, so that can be mass produced. So that's what one of my current projects.
That's amazing. And, you know, I'm personally really fascinated, as you can see. You know, I've done my own research, and when I came across you and your website and got to know what you're working at, I got really excited, because obviously, in addition to the actual scientific research, you know, it's all linked to Osho somehow. And the fact that, you know, you're a sannyasin and you've been with him really kind of got so hyper excited. But so where can people find you if they want to know more about you and your activities, or get in touch with you and learn more about your beautiful research and products?
Well, I published a book last year, which is called Light Therapies. And so that's really, that's probably the best way to find out about the beauty of light, and what it can do in all its dimensions. You can find it at the website light-therapies.com. And I also have a website describing my different instruments. It's called sensora.com.
Wonderful. And I'll link them both in the show notes of this episode, so everyone interested can find you there.
Mm.
Okay, so we are heading towards the end. I've got three final questions for you. The first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Huh. Well, I'm more a night owl type. I'm a night person. I often work late and go to sleep late, so I don't get up very early. I'm not very functional in the morning. I'm very slow in the morning, so I take my time. I don't do much for an hour or two, really. Just slowly take some coffee or tea and read and gradually get going.
Fair enough. Talking about circadian rhythms, there are studies now that show that there are people have different rhythms, and
yes, you are the
night owls.
Yes.
Okay, so the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
Well, in the old days of Pune, one, my favorite meditation was the Kundalini. I did it for once for 6 months in a row every day, and it really transformed me. The dynamic was kind of too intense for me, and even Osho recommended that I stick with Kundalini. Nowadays, I don't really have a particular technique. I love to keep a completely open mind about meditation and just find it wherever it comes, in whatever form it comes. I do love, of course, meditation techniques that have to do with light. For example, the Gaurishankar or the Shiva Netra, another beautiful technique that Osho created. But these days, really, it's technique-less.
Okay, fair enough. And I will probably add another question on that technique you mentioned. I know Gaurishankar, but I've never heard about the other one you mentioned. Would you like to say a little bit more about that?
Shiva Netra, yeah, it's very little known. It's a very simple technique, and Osho describes it using a blue light that just increases gradually over many minutes and then decreases gradually over many minutes. And that cycle is repeated three times. It's a very strange technique, really. And when I read about it, I don't think it was ever practiced in the ashram, but I read about it in forget which book, maybe the Orange Book. And as I thought, now, how are you going to get a light that comes on gradually over minutes and disappears over minutes? So I actually built one. I designed a circuit, electronic circuit, to control that light. And I found it absolutely, that rhythm, that very, very slow rhythm, was so powerful, so deep. It worked so beautifully for me. So it's unfortunate that it's so little known, because, again, it's not so easy to apply. But he also did mention that you can do it simply with a candle, and just looking at the candle and closing your eyes. So that's a low-tech version of the Shiva Netra. But the real thing with the blue light coming in over minutes is a beautiful technique.
Well, thank you for sharing that, and it's really enriching because I was under the impression, I've done lots of research and I wanted to know all about the different Osho techniques, and today I learned something new. That's amazing. Okay, so the last question is...
Shiva Nitra, it's the Eye of Shiva.
The Eye of Shiva. Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah. So you lead the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2019?
In a way, Osho is so much integral part of myself that I can't really anymore separate him from me in the sense that I feel that he's totally merged with my life, my lifestyle. So sometimes it's difficult to feel what is connected to him and what is not. But It's a difficult question for him. All I can say is that I'm eternally grateful for the incredible years I spent with him. It's such a gift that has been given to me. It's very, very hard for me to put in words.
I think that says a lot, and I can feel it in my heart. You answered definitely, and I love that. And I'm immensely grateful for sharing your love for Osho and your beautiful research and development of this amazing product that you are developing. And we can take it offline. But as I mentioned to you, I'm really interested because I do work somehow in the field of preventative health, and be great if I can support you in any shape perform, because I truly believe in what you're doing. So that's the end of the show, and send you lots of love, a big hug, and next time you come to Singapore for business or pleasure, let me know and let's meet and talk more.
Yes, I definitely will. Good night.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love of Show podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit laboshow.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.